Blog Talk Radio.
And not only the image, but even down to the name. Where it's only in modern English that we have the name Jesus. A couple of hundred years ago, that name never existed.
The mainstream media is ignoring this information. Most of the alternative media is also ignoring it.
The way.
Poetic Energy Network.
Shalom, man. What's going on? Shabbat shalom. Oh, man, it's another week, man. Yahuwah bless us to another week. I hope you're having a blessed Shabbat. It's another day, you know, entering into this course with praise, you know, with Thanksgiving. I mean, it's just awesome. Man, we have an awesome show lined up, man. We got a special guest that's coming on later. You'll be excited about it. We have James Green, former member of Drew Hill. He's coming to, you know, share a little word with us and chop it up with him. But, you know, we can get right into it, man, because it's just so awesome what the Father has, you know, revealed and what's going down. So let's pray. Father Yahuwah, we thank you for another Shabbat. We pray, Father, that you would reveal, that we wouldn't speak our own words, but Father, that you would speak through us, and Father, just help us to learn and just enjoy your set apart day. In Yahushua HaMashiach's name, we pray. So be it. All right, man. I'm down in the Carolinas now. But, you got Hurricane Irene and that going on. But earlier this week, I don't know if you know, heard the news story. It was pretty much the biggest story of the week. Pretty much everybody knew. Everyone to go in the current news right now. I had an article called The Day Washington Shook, you know, the 5.9 earthquake that hit the Capitol. I just want to touch on a little bit and read a little bit, and then we're gonna dive into it. We're gonna show you what the real is. Okay. It says a magnitude 5.8 earthquake rattles the nerves and jolted buildings in the nation's capital Tuesday. Rare geological event that was felt up and down the East Coast from Georgia to Massachusetts. The quake's epicenter was about 83 miles southwest of Washington and Virginia. It struck about 1:51 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, immediately sparking fears of the 9/11 attempt attacks given in the area prone to tremblers. The earthquake was the largest intensity and extent in historic times. Julia Dalton, a geological, at the U.S. Geological Service National Earthquake Center in Boulder, Colorado, told McCarthy. Washington office buildings and center of the power were quickly evacuated in orderly fashion, but the massive volume of cell phone calls and texts appeared to have crashed the communication system. The quake was felt on Martha's Vineyard, where the President Barack Obama, it says, were playing golf. Reporters traveling with Obama said they felt it. The White House said later Tuesday that the President did not. In an earlier statement, the White House said that Obama led a conference call an hour after the quake with Homeland Security officials and science advisors and was told that there was no reports of massive infrastructure damage. The memories of Japan post-tsunami nuclear problems still fresh. 11 U.S. nuclear plants in Virginia, Maryland, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Michigan went on low alerts. Status, declaring an unusual event because they felt the earthquake. This triggers closer reviews of operation of the plant officials by regulators. Late that day, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued a statement confirming that 12 plants in North Anna Power Station operated by Dominion Virginia plant and relatively close to the epicenter was on higher alert. And there's another quote right here I wanted to read. This is from Ann Bell Wade, an agency spokesman, who said it shook pretty significantly. The earthquake along the East Coast are very rare, in part because they are normally not triggered by the same grinding of the earth plate that are common in the California and Northwest. Quakes occur on the faults within the bedrock that are located within the below the United States. High-risk areas for giant earthquakes are closer to the subduction zones, where plate boundaries are far from the earth, far below the earth, move together. Okay, so you know it goes on, and you know the article goes on, and pretty much what you'll find is the consistent media, you know, mumbo jumbo of what the reports were. And so, what's pretty interesting is, I'm watching the news. I was actually in the room, and I seen TV moving, and what's going on here? And so, find out about the earthquake. So I began to watch the news, and you can begin to discern the news, and they're saying that the earthquake was 1 kilometer, underneath the earth's surface. And, we all pretty much went to school and we know, okay, that's not very deep in the earth's surface. But yet, as the story develops, we look and you say, okay, man, this earthquake span, you're talking about people from Georgia to Martha's Vineyard, and you're talking about almost 2,000 miles of spanning of earthquake from a 5.8. In which we just read that on the East Coast, there's not that many, tectonic plates, that cause earthquake, because we don't have earthquakes like California, because they have, they're basically on a fault line. And so we're not really on a fault line. So earthquake, we have the mid-adrenic, but we have the fault line, towards the middle east of the United States. And so I was, listening to the report, and they said, and just things weren't, adding up. 1 kilometer underneath the ground, and it was a 5.8. And so how was this earthquake seen and felt 2,000 miles? I actually have a friend. I actually have a brother, a Hebrew brother in Philadelphia. He actually called me. Yashron, a big shout out to you out there. He actually called me and was like, man, did you feel that? And so that was a couple minutes after, it happened down here. And so, so I'm adding up and I'm watching CNN, and the lady says, do you believe that there was something more sinister at hand? And the lady denies him to say, no, this is definitely, a natural disaster, a unrare natural occurrence in the geological, system of the earth. And so I just felt that and she covered it up real quick. So I'm like, you just don't try to, everything is this, everything is that, and, because you want to get all the facts. You just don't want to just be like, because, today things are so crazy. You don't know what's really real. Like, even watching a Hollywood movie, you can't tell, what was a soundstage, what was this, what was that. And so, so I began to just look I was talking to a couple people. But we want to, there's a lot of word going on out there, but I want to, you know, this is our section right here. This is my favorite part of, like, the show right here. This is called the rewind. So, you know, let's rewind the situation back and let's see what's really. Hold on. We're going to take it back. I'm going to give you a little introduction right here. We're going to take it back because I found out, I don't know if you know yet, but the government has a lot of material you just don't hear about. And this is top secret. They have a lot of material you don't hear about. One thing, you know, our technology is almost 20 years behind the military. So we don't really know what they're doing, but I want to take you back to 95. I want to take you back to 95. So this year is 90. Just rewind it back. Rewind it back.
First, let me give you a little bit of background on who I am. I'm Dr. Nick Begich. I'm a author and lecturer. I have a doctorate in traditional and complementary medicines. I was born and raised and spent most of my life here in Alaska. I also work as the executive director for the Lay Institute on Technologies, based in Dallas, Texas. Its main mission is to educate the public on the impacts and repercussions of technology so that we can be prepared in this century. The first topic today that we want to cover is updates on the HARP story, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project, which many people are familiar with. This project initially was a joint effort of the Air Force and Navy to build large radio transmitters here in Alaska. These transmitters would occupy a huge area. Initially, it was 48 antennae in the array. These are antennas that are 72 feet tall, have a cross dipole, so across the top you'll see this type of a shape. These are about 70 feet across. There's 48 in the array. Eventually, at the end of this coming summer of 2005, we'll be seeing 180 antenna in the array, and eventually the full array will be 360 antenna. The idea between these radio frequency generators is to focus radio frequency energy in a much different way than most of us think about radio frequency energy coming off of an antenna, if we think of it at all. But when you think about it, when you go back to the original companies that started this project, it was a company called Arco Power Technologies, Inc., which was a subsidiary of Atlantic Richfield, one of the largest oil and gas companies at that time operating in Alaska. They sold that subsidiary to E-Systems, which is a military contractor, a large military contractor based in Washington, D.C., who later sold it to Raytheon, who later sold it to British Aerospace, which now controls that technology. But in the course of that, one of the things that they had talked about was what's called earth-penetrating tomography. This is the idea of sending a signal up into the ionosphere, oscillating that signal off the ionosphere, which actually causes that layer 30 miles above the Earth's surface to begin to vibrate in harmony with the signal on the ground, causing it to act as a giant broadcast antenna, sending that signal back down to the Earth, and it passes through the Earth and see in the form of an ELF, an extremely low frequency signal, a very long wavelength that efficiently passes through the Earth, and that can be used for a number of things, including earth-penetrating tomography, the idea of looking into the Earth, or in plain language, it would be like, by comparison, X-raying the Earth, or looking into the Earth for underground mineral layers, underground shelters, nuclear facilities, and the like. Cook's concern was much broader in terms of what could be triggered with earth-penetrating tomography. And one of the things that he noted was the effect of resonance, this idea of sending energy in. It harmonizes in a way that causes the energy actually to be more than the sum of the total. You know, it's like the old World War I stories where the armies were marching across wooden bridges in Europe, and some hours after they had marched across, the bridges would just collapse. And it was the rhythmic beat of the march across that bridge that set up essentially a vibration that eventually collapsed the entire structure. This idea of resonance, when applied to earth-penetrating tomography at very high power levels, causes concern for many scientists, including Brooks Agnew, because what he believes is possible is to trigger events within the Earth, geophysical events, earthquake, volcanic eruptions, the kinds of things that may already be on the edge of discharge, and with the right resonant energies added into the system, cause them to overload and actually fracture. In fact, it was William Cohen that actually made the statement regarding weapons of mass destruction and the idea of generating earthquakes artificially. Weapons of mass destruction and the idea of generating earthquakes artificially. Weapons of mass destruction and the idea of generating earthquakes artificially.
So I don't know if you heard that. Weapons of mass destruction and creating earthquakes artificially. So, you know, we ain't gonna get too much into it. We actually gonna get into it, but we just want to leave you with a little food for thought. Now, I came across a couple articles, you know, doing a little research, and what you have to understand is our enemy, Hashatan, the adversary, is a little more clever than you actually think. So, you know, this thing's getting deeper because coming out of the truth, you never taught this. You never taught, okay, you know, of course we knew what was going on in the church. You know, we know that the deception behind what has been taught, you know, that they actually have destroyed the Bible without even burning it. They have destroyed by taking things out, removing things, replacing things, and have created doctrines off of these things. And one time I heard somebody say the best way to, you know, the best way for deception to happen is to do it right in front of your face without you knowing. You know, it's like, it's kind of the equivalent of somebody in your house, you know, you're always suspecting somebody's stealing from you, and you keep getting your stuff stolen, but you never suspect that the one who's stealing from you is in your house. Same thing. So when it comes to the weather, quote unquote, we're going to get back into it, you know, about this Illuminati, what's going on, but when you think about it, I mean, it gets deeper that they have weapons. Yes, they have weapons that not only they are able to now alter weather, alter, you heard this guy, this is back in 95. This is before, you know, really before the internet boom. I mean, the internet was, you know, I don't quote me on this, but, you know, and so, you know, it's before the blogs and all this. This is 95, you know, Dr. Nick Beggs is saying, you know, this heart machine is able to create, he actually wrote a book called The Military's Pandora's Box. If you get a chance, you got to check that out, The Military's Pandora's Box. And, you know, so these machines now, Hashatan has gotten so, you know, that they are able to alter weather patterns without it, and it looking like it's natural. So, I mean, this plays into the hands of prophecy because we know about the Son of Perdition who's going to come. So Satan is basically a copycat of the truth. He's the father of lies. So everything he does is going to look like the truth, but it's going to be a lie. So when we get into it, everything he tries to do is a mirror. So maybe he would try to reenact an end-time scenario to get people to believe that when the Son of Perdition comes, it is actually the Messiah. Now, I got some articles that are very, very interesting I found. Now, this is some food for thought that I want you to think about. I want to read a quote right now before I get into it from 1997 from the U.S. Secretary of Defense, William Colin Powell. Okay, this is what he says. He says other, quote-unquote, terrorists are engaging in even echo type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. So there are plenty of ingenious minds out there that are at work finding ways which are they can wreak terror upon the nations. It's real. And that's the reason why we are intensifying our counterterrorism efforts. Now, this is Colin Powell, the Secretary of Defense, from 1997, talking about that, quote-unquote terrorists or others, when you think about it, it's kind of almost, like we said, the best way to deceive somebody is to tell them, you know, what the truth is, but don't, you know, act like it's not the truth. So they make it like it's somebody else that's doing it, but, you know, what is the highest power, earthly power in the world? You're talking about the United Nations. You're talking about these people know this weapon is controlled. Where is the United Nations in New York? So these things is coming from America. You know, they know about these machines. You know, but this is William Cohen Powell talking about this. So, you know, he's talking about this. And so we know that this pretty much exists. I mean, Alaska, you can check it up, HAARP, H-A-A-R-P. You can look at it. But this is where it gets interesting. This is where the story turns and begins to get interesting. This is what I found out. I was doing some research, and you know, of course, I'm not a scientist or anything like that. I don't claim to be. But it was a guy named Richard Hoagland. Hope I get his name right. But Hoagland claims that, among other things, that there are some scurrying hundreds of hours of satellite radar images and a variety of other sources that have documented a phenomenon that he believes is evidence that someone or something has affected the path and the intensity of tropical storms and hurricanes in the Atlantic Ocean. Now, I have, if you wanted, you know, you could email me or anything, and I could give you this information. But there was a hurricane by the name of, I think it was Othello. Happened in 2005. Now what the satellite images show is, you know, some kind of magnetic microwave, you know, images altering this hurricane. And so, you know, a lot of the weather people were saying, you know, this storm was going to end up, the Weather Service predicted that it would end up becoming a Category 4, you know, and within 24 to 48 hours. And, you know, so, I mean, these people study weather, so they pretty much, you know, know. But instead, within 12 hours, this storm completely dissipates completely. I mean, it almost, you know, disintegrates. And satellite images and thorough images, you know, how they you know, that you look at the weather and they you know, show the different, you know, textures of wavelengths. Somehow these wavelengths are in this picture. So you're telling me a hurricane that is about to be a Category 4, you know, disintegrates to, you know, basically nothing within 12 hours. So, you know, you got to do your research for yourself. But a lot of people are saying, you know, it's around the time of Hurricane Arlene. And so a lot of people saying that these microwave waves from HAARP may be the cause for this rare earthquake. Maybe they were trying to alter Arlene and hit the East Coast. So I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that a 5.8 earthquake may not stretch 2,000 something miles. I mean, you're talking about an earthquake that can occur in a city, and some people about 100 miles away may not even feel it. But yet, 2,000 miles away from a 5.8, a significant low earthquake. We're not talking about the scale of Haiti, and you know, Port-au-Prince and all these other things. We're talking about, you know, relatively small earthquake, and these things happen. So, I mean, this opens your mind up now to, you know, being able to now you have to pray to Yahuwah. You have to seek the Father, because not everything is what meets the eye. You know, we live in the Matrix. We live in the Matrix, so not everything is with seen eye. You go look at a Hollywood movie, you know, if you didn't know the technicality behind it, you would believe everything you saw with your eyes was the truth. The same thing. The media, controlled by the adversary, you know, paints a picture, and they say what they want you to believe and expect, you know, most people are not going to question, oh, we're not going to question. I mean, it was an earthquake, you know. But the Messiah said, in the end times, there will be earthquakes in diverse places. You know, this is not even the beginning. This is not even the beginning. All these things will be the beginning of the birth pains. He said, the end is not yet. The end is not yet. But it would just be the beginning. So let's read that. Let's go into that real quick. Then we're going to move on. But let's go into that. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, verse 3. And as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the taught ones came to him separately, saying, say to us, when shall this be? And what is the sign of your coming of the end of the age? And Yahushua answered him and said to them, take heed that no one leads you astray. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Messiah. And they shall lead many astray. And you shall begin to hear of fighting and reports of fighting. See that you are not troubled, for these have to take place, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and reign against reign, and there shall be scarcity of food, deadly disease, and earthquake places. And all these are the beginning of the birth pains. Yahushua never said, these earthquakes are natural. You know, people take to out of context. You look at, if you get a chance, research the last couple of, maybe 14 days of earthquakes. It's a growing phenomenon that's going on, and pretty much, I believe, we haven't seen nothing yet, you know. So, you know, that's something to think about. Hey, deception even grows to the weather now. You know, you have chemtrails. I don't know if you know about the chemtrails. That's a good study you look on. I mean, they have chemtrails, which, you know, some believe, okay, you know, the plane flies by and, you know, it sometimes it leaves, you know, exhaust fumes and then it, but exhaust fumes dissipate. So while these chemtrails now, these, you know, what you would spray on maybe a farm or something, while they spray it over whole cities and rural areas? And why are people, as a result of these chemicals released in the air, becoming sick? You know, I mean, this thing is more, the rabbit hole goes a little more than you actually think. It's a little more deeper. It's a little more deeper than, you know, we perceive it to be. You know, so things are going on that people don't know about. But I want to right now take it. Take it back. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to go to the next section. We're going to go to, like I said, we live in the Matrix, and it gets even deeper. You listen to the Poetic Energy Network. I'm Yahushua, and this is The Way.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
I'm sorry about that. We're back. We're back now. We had a little technical difficulties going on. We're back. Sorry about that.
Okay. I don't know what you missed. We had a little technical difficulties after the Matrix, but this is what we tried to do. Okay. So this is what we're going on. Okay. Let's get back into the Matrix. Okay. We were talking about the red or blue pill, and what happens now is, the red or blue pill. We were talking about the feast of Hashatan versus the feast of Yahuwah. Okay. A lot of people don't know. When you go back to the Tower of Babel. You go back to the Tower of Babel. What were they actually doing? Like, why are they building? Why are they trying to build, yo? Why are they trying to build a monument, yo, and build it up to the heavens? Okay, so we find out, man, archaeological evidence suggests that there was actually a spectacular pyramid built back then in the time of Nimrod, you know, who was basically the owner of, the ruler of the city of Babel, where there was one language and one religion. You know, their plan was to try to overthrow Elohim with their satanic religion. So you began to think, man, the mother of civilization of these religions today, you know, goes all the way back to Babylon. Why was Yahuwah trying to destroy everybody? Like, why only 8 people made it onto the ark? Like, why did these things happen? It was because people like Nimrod, who felt that they could build up to the heavens and overthrow Yahuwah, this is what happened. And so this will happen again. This is happening today. There will be, you know, a push for one religion. You have, I don't know if you heard, Krishlam, Islam and Christianity. We talked about last week how they're even trying to, you know, build the Temple Mount beside the Dome of the Rock. Mm-hmm. So we have it right there. We have it right there going on. So, you know, it goes again. You know what I'm saying? So let's get into it. Let's get into the seven feasts. Okay, you have Easter. Man, you know what Easter is, man. Nimrod, the sun god, married his mother. Supposedly, Ishtar becomes an egg. Guess what? She has a son named Talmuzah, quote-unquote, Bel, resurrected in the only begotten son. Now, so a lot of these times, you see these pictures, you know, you see these pictures of Caesar Boger, and you look at this lady holding this son. Well, what is that? We know, according to the scriptures, you know, that Yahusha has skins of bronze and hair like wool. So, number one, you know, something ain't right. You're looking at this picture, something ain't right. Why, you know, who painted this? Who says this is, you know, our Savior? You know who says that's your Savior? Hashatan, he puts it before you to get you to believe it. So, JC, quote-unquote, Jesus and Mary are now painted as who really are Samaritans and Nimrod. You're talking about incest. You're talking about, they're saying Nimrod married his mother. And people look at this picture and hang it up in their churches saying this is him. Like, how disgusting is that? I mean, that's disgusting. And when this adulterous and idolatrous woman gave birth to this illegitimate son named Talmuzah, she claimed that this son, Talmuzah is his name, and what he was Nimrod reborn. And she claimed that her son was supernaturally conceived. Like no human father. Remember, let's rewind it back. Hashatan does everything opposite, but yet try to parallel it to what Yahuwah would do. So you have a mother having a son who supposedly doesn't have no human father and is the rebirth of Nimrod.
I mean, you look in Ezekiel, I mean, you know, they began to take the name Talmud out because they don't want nobody to know. They began to take it out to the Bible, the scriptures, whatever you call it. And they began to take it out because they don't want nobody to know the truth. But every Easter, do you know who Christians worship? You worship Talmud. You don't worship the Messiah. Yahushua. And I'll show you. You say the Messiah dies on Friday and rises on Sunday morning. I mean, we don't have to be, you know, in Christianity. I was in Christianity. I never understood it. You never just sit down and just think. Like, you're in the matrix so much. The matrix teaches you not to think. It just teaches you to go like a robot. But when you think about it, if Yahushua said he was in the grave, he said, I would only give you the sign of Jonah. I would be in the earth, the belly of the well. He said he would be in the earth. 3 days, three nights. He don't want you to even mess it up. He says 3 days, three nights. That's, you know, we know in Hebrew culture a day was technically, you know, the 12-hour portion of the day. And in the night, you got the 12-hour portion of the day. You got a day, 24 hours. So you got 72 hours. Yahushua's in the belly of the well. 72 hours. So you're saying if he dies on Friday, 24 hours from there is, you know, I mean, of course, we're using the quote unquote, you know, the pagan word, so you can understand where we're coming from. But we know the days are 1, 2, 3, you know, day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and 7. So he dies. So you say he dies, you know, on the sixth day, Friday, and then you say he rises Saturday. That's one day. Sunday, the next day. And so you're talking about Monday. If you're trying to do the truth, he had to rise on Monday. So that right there bears witness that, hey, you don't even believe in the resurrection. If you believe in Easter, you don't believe in the resurrection. If you believe in Easter, you believe in Talmud, who was born from a relationship that, quote-unquote, Nimrod and Samaritus, who married his mother, had. You're talking about an abomination. You believe in an abomination. This is disgusting to Yahuwah. Come out of her, my people. Next, let's move on because we gotta move. We got an awesome guest coming on the show in a minute. James Green from used to be with Drew Hill, man. It's going to be awesome. You know what I'm saying? So we're going to get it. You still listening to the Poetic Energy Network, and I'm Yahuwah side. But let's move on real quick. You have Christmas. We're going to speed through them a little bit right now because we got to get moving. You got Christmas. Nimrod, you know, Nimrod was beginning to organize his world apostasy, just like we're talking about with the city of Babel. So he began to, you know, they're building the towers and everything. This is pretty much where all the religions kind of, you know, because when Yahuwah came down and he separated the languages, each person, you know, they still had that, you know, that abomination still carrying over in their heart, and it's trickled down into even today, to even to the, in the churches, and churches, even kind of all kind of religions. And so this is what happens about Christmas. This is the story behind Christmas. So after Nimrod's death, his so-called mother, wife, Samaritus, quote-unquote Ishtar, propagated an evil doctrine that the survival of Nimrod's spirit, that she claimed that an ever tree sprouted up overnight from a dead tree stump, symbolizing the spring into a new life from the death of Nimrod. And on the anniversary of his birth, quote unquote, December 25th, Nimrod would visit the evergreen tree and place gifts upon it underneath it. So when you get gifts, you're getting them. I mean, you're talking about, this is incest. You know, you believe it. You're giving gifts. I mean, the reality is that you believe in incest. But whether we do it, you know, because we all did it, you know, rather ignorantly or whatever, but you do it, and this is what you believe. This is the belief behind it. You know, it has nothing to do with the Messiah. It has nothing to do with the Messiah because, number one, we don't know the exact date he was born. And so you're saying you believe on December 25th, you're believing in the birth of Nimrod, who married his mother, who supposedly, you know, brings gifts under a tree. So we go to New Year's, we go to the next evil feast, then we go to New Year's. You look at New Year's, and in 46 BCE, the Roman Emperor Julius Caesar established that January 1st was now the New Year's. So Junius was the Roman god of the door and open gates, and had two faces, forward and back. So what happened is the Roman pagans began to observe New Year's by engaging in drunken orgies, a ritual they believed that constituted a personal reenactment of the chaotic world which existed in the cosmos before the orders of the gods, the gods. So, I mean, basically New Year's is a celebration of orgies, you know, celebration of lawlessness. That's what it is, because we know the Hebrew year starts with the month of Avel, you know, us observing the barley and making sure it's ripe, and then the new moons, you know, when the new moon shows, then we begin our year. That's how it goes. That's how it always goes. That's how he started it. But, you know, we live in the matrix, but come out of her. Okay, we look at Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, it says the goddess of the harvest, Ceres is the holiday of Sorella. It says the worship of the queen of the heaven, which goes all the way back to Babylonian society, Semiramis. So Thanksgiving is really the worship of Semiramis, who, you know, we just discussed. So birthdays is another one. That's the fifth one. That's the worship of self and witchcraft. We know Deuteronomy 12. We'll read it real quick. Deuteronomy 12 and verse 30. This is what he says. Like, don't. I mean, it sounds hard because it might be new to you. It might be new to you today, you know. And nobody's beating you up because we all did it. I did everything, single thing on this list. Celebrated it. But guess what? When it shows you the truth. Because we got to love discipline, you know, because if he didn't love you, he wouldn't discipline you, he wouldn't tell you the truth. You know, he would just let you keep riding and doing what you're doing. Now when you start rebelling and he tells you the truth and you don't want to hear it, then we have a plot. But Deuteronomy 12, 30 says, guard yourself that you are not ensnared and follow them. Do not follow these people going the wrong way. Wide is the gate. It says after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire about their mighty ones, saying, how did these nations serve their mighty ones? Let us do so too. Do not do so to Yahuwah your Elohim. For every abomination which Yahuwah has hate, they have done to their mighty ones. So every abomination that he hates, they have done, the world has done. But let's talk about this birthday thing. That's what he says. Hey, let's flip real quick. Deuteronomy 18, verse 10. This is what he says about this. Because, you know, he told us, number one, we were not to practice and hold, you know, like special, you know, dates and all these kind of, you know, sorcery-type superstitions. You know what I'm saying? Like, this gets deeper because it goes back into witchcraft. You know, so you don't want to hold these things, like these birthdays, because, it's deeply rooted in paganism. The early believers did not do. Of course, you got to know, you know, of course, we know we live in Babylon. You're filling out a form. You got to write your birthday on it. That's cool. You know, we know, according to the world, that's the day, you know, that we were born. But we know that the Hebrew calendar, you know, is different from that. But what we're saying is we have a lot of people out there who want to worship themselves. You want to have a birthday party. You want to, you know, you want to celebrate. You want to go party all night. And you really want to worship yourself. That's what it gets into. And so we're saying that, of course, you got to know, you know, because you got a birth certificate. You know, I mean, these are things that you just can't avoid, but we know there's a whole different mindset between, you know, knowing the truth and then going and acting on different things. But he says this. He says, let no one be found among you who makes his son or daughter pass through the fire, or one who practices divination, or a user of magic, or one who interprets omens or a sorcerer, or one who conjures up spells, medium, spiritist, or one who calls up the dead. For whoever does these abominations to Yahuwah, and because of these abominations, Yahuwah your Elohim has driven out before you. So we want to move on to another one, because we got two more. You got the, and then you got the Halloween. You got the Halloween, which is, we just read, he don't say, he just said on conjure up the dead. Halloween is the honor of the dead. That's what it is. The festival of Shamhan. That's what it is. Maybe we got the last one, Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day, man. You got Nimrod marries his mother. You got Nimrod marries his mother. Remember we talked about they supposedly have a son, Talmuzah, which is quote-unquote called Cupid. I mean, Nimrod is also what's called Cupid, too. So you have, you know, because they have multiple names, but you have, it's basically the love for him and his mother, man. That's disgusting. It says back in the Torah, it says cursed is any man. Like, cursed is any man. You lay with your mother, man. That's even the thought of that. Even if it's just imaginary, yo, that's an abomination. That's cursed. So you know, it's Valentine's Day. You know, when you see it, you know, it's basically the thinking about incest. You know, which is an abomination to Yahuwah and curses any man who does so. So repent. Okay, now we have the red pill. Oh man, this is what I want to talk about. This is where it gets good right here. Because you have the biblical feast. And so a lot of people, now the doctrine is, Hashatan has got people to believe, okay, you know, the biblical feast, they're passed away, yo. Nobody does these feasts anymore. The law's passed away with, and, you know, all this other stuff, which is not true. These feasts have been practiced since they were instituted, and for furthermore, they will be practiced. You know, we know when we get in Isaiah, it talks about that from new moon to new moon, from Sabbath to Sabbath, from new moon to new moon, we will go up and worship Yahuwah. You know, in one of the feasts, in the feast of, I believe it's Booze, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's in Yeshayahu, Isaiah 66. But we're going to talk about this, the Passover. We're going to show you every one of these feasts. Well, not only in the Old Testament, but they're in the New Testament. So they're in the New Testament, and then guess what? People that call yourself Christians and call yourself a believer of the truth, but yet you don't follow the truth. You honor him with your lips, but your hearts are far from him. In vain you worship him, teaching doctrines of men. Okay, let's go to Passover. Let's talk about the Passover. Leviticus 23 and 5. We're going to speed through this. I hope you got the scriptures out. You're still listening to the Poetic Energy Network. This is the way, and I'm Yahuwah's side. Hope you got the scriptures out. Leviticus 23 and 5. 23 and 5, it says, in the first moon, on the 14th day of the new moon, between the evenings, is the Pesach to Yahuwah. Right? Okay. So, I want you to, you know, if you don't, this goes into archives, you know, we talk about this, so if you don't get a chance to get these, write these down, because this is a good tool, you know, for people that say, oh, the feast, man, they over with, man. Man, that was the Messiah's time, man. That wasn't even Messiah's time. They didn't know what you're talking about, the Old Testament. You know what I'm saying? Nah, man. Look at this. Let's go to Matthew 20:25. These are called, quote-unquote, hair busters for people that don't want to, you know, don't want to believe it, because you can't deny the evidence. Whether you have a KJV or whatever version you have, it says Matthew 26 and verse 2, it says, you know that after 2 days the Pesach takes place. This is this right here is Yahushua talking. He said the Pesach takes place and the son of Adam is to be delivered up and to impale. So this right here shows you, hey, the Pesach was going down. Let's go to 17. It says, on the first day of unleavened bread, the top ones came to Yahushua saying, where do you wish for us to prepare and eat the Pesach? There it goes again. And he said, go into the city to a certain man, saying to him, the teacher says, the time is near. I will perform the Pesach at your house with my talents. Now, we can get into this. We don't want to, you know, get too much into it. But guess where else the Pesach is found? It's found in Mark 14, 12 through 16, Luke 2, 41 through 42, Luke 22, verse 1, Luke 7, and Luke, Luke, and Luke also 7 through 20. Let's look again. You got John. Where else is the Pesach found? John 2:13. John 23. John 6 and 4. John 13, 1 through 30. 1 Corinthians, also 1 Corinthians 1, 11, verse 23 through 29. So let's look at that. Even Shaul was saying it. Even Shaul was saying it. Paul. Quote unquote, Paul was saying it. Let's look what Paul says about it. We know it was in the Thesaurus. We know it was in the quote unquote, you know, how people say the Gospels, you know, but that's not the correct term. So 1 Corinthians 11, verse 23 says, and for I have received from the Master which I also delivered you, that the Master in the night, it says, in the night that he was delivered, he having given thanks, broke and said, take, eat, this is my body which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, also the cup after the supper, saying, this is the cup of the new covenant, which I, as often, it says, the covenant of my blood. As often as you drink it, do this in remembrance of me. For often as you eat the bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the death of the Master until he comes. So whatever you should eat and drink of this cup is of whoever should eat and drink of this cup, I mean eat this bread and drink this cup of the Master unworthily, who shall bring guilty on the body and the blood of the Messiah. You know, so he goes on right there. He also says in a couple one, you know, we should keep the feast. So let's go back to the unleavened bread, Leviticus. So we have Leviticus 26. This is the next feast. We have the Feast of Unleavened Bread. On the 15th day of the new moon is the festival of Matzah. It says, to Yahuwah. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. It says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. This also, again, is in the New Testament. We turn to Matthew. We just read an early one, which said, what talked about the unleavened bread. 26:17. Matthew 26:17 says, and on the first day of unleavened bread, the taught ones came to Yahushua and said to him. So the Ruach makes it clear and evident that the Spirit makes it evident that, hey, these feasts were still going on. You also look in Mark 14, 12, Luke 2, 41 through 42, also Luke 22, verse 1 and 7, Acts 20 and 6. Let's look in Acts 20:6. You know, and sorry I'm going fast. Get a chance, you can check this out on the Poetic Energy Network Station archives, you know. But it says, Acts 20:6 says, and they sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came to Tyros in 5 days, where they stayed 7 days. It says it right there. The Ruach makes it again, Spirit makes it again evident that, hey, this unleavened bread still was going on. If they did it, and if we are supposed to live like the Messiah and live like the taught ones and the disciples, shouldn't we keep the same thing? Shouldn't we do the same thing they did? Aren't we made in His image? Shouldn't we keep the Torah, the statutes, the laws, and commands? Yes, we should. Let's look at it again. The Feast of Pentecost, Acts 2. I know you know about Acts 2. Feast of Pentecost was going on. Acts 2, 1 through 21. We're not even going to We're not even going to get all the way into it. But guess what it says? It says, verse 1, it says, on the day of the festival of Shavuot, which is weeks or Pentecost in the Greek, had came, they were all in one mind in one place. There it goes again. That's three feasts. So let's see. Show me a feast that was not back there. Let's go again. The Feast of Trumpets. We look back, Leviticus 23 through 25, Feast of Trumpets. It says, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh new moon on the first day of the new moon, you have the rest, remembrance of the Torah. This is a set apart gathering. This, once again, this is the day of trumpets. This is the day of the blowing of the shofar, the day of trumpets. Okay, so once again, this is here. Okay, but let's see. Okay, is it in the New Testament? Is it in the quote unquote New Testament? Let's find out. What is it symbolic? You know, because we can get into it deeper and show what everything is symbolically saying. But these are things that he said back then. He said, this is for your generation. These are forever. Like, these are forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, forever is like, yo, like, forever. Like, it's no end. You know, it's no, you know, we look at Matthew 24, verse 30. Well, let's look at verse 31. It says, look, it says, and he, this is the end of times right here. This is the end days. He said, and he shall send his messengers with a great sound of a trumpet. With a great sound of a trumpet. That's what we're talking about, the seventh trumpet that's going to go down in the seventh seal. This is what they're talking about. This is what we're, you know, it's also seen in 1 Thessalonians 4, 16 through 17 and Revelation 11. Through 15. Okay, what else do we have? We have the Day of Atonement. That's right there. That right there, that scene in Leviticus 16 through 32. Okay, then we go to Acts 27, and where is it found in the New Testament? Acts 27 and 9. Let's go there real quick. So Acts 27:9, it says, let me see if I got this the right one. Okay, now this is the time of a lot of people believe that this was around the time of, in the situation where he wrote this letter, it was around the time of the feast of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement, which is the Day of Atonement, or coverings, or atonement, which Yahushua did with his blood. He covered our sins, just like they had on the mercy seat. The high priest used to go in and begin to sprinkle blood in order to for atonement for the people, and that's what Yahushua did. But he did it in the heavens. He took his own blood and sprinkled it in the mercy seat within the heavens, giving us a way and right to the Father, Yahuwah. So a lot of people believe, you know, Acts 27:9, it says that much time had passed and they were selling on dangerous, being dangerous, because the fast was already over. And Shaul advised them. Because we know on Day of Atonement, both trumpets and Day of Atonement are coming up. They're coming up a couple of weeks, you know, so it's going down. Get yourself ready. Get yourself prepared for the feast. But we know the Day of Atonement, which was, you know, the day of fasting. That's a mandatory date of a fast, 24-hour fast, dry fast, in which it's a day of affliction, you know, for us. And so they're saying, you know, a lot of people believe this right here was the day of the fast, you know, the fast that everybody knows about. So we have two more feasts. We have the Feast of Tabernacles, which is found in Leviticus. You have a chance to check it out, Leviticus 23, 33 through 43. Then we look at John. We look at John 7. John 7. John 7, verse 1 says, "And after this, Yahushua was walking in Galilee, and he did not wish to walk in the Yehudim, because the Yehudim were seeking to kill him. And the festival of the Yehudim was near the festival of Shacharit. Hoping I'm pronouncing that right. Which is the festival of booths or tabernacles." So once again, I'm sure it's there. It's more verses there. You have John. You have we went down to verse 8. It says, "You go." This is what Jehoshaphat said. He says, "You go up to this festival. I am not yet going to this festival, for my time is not yet." Look, Yahushua advised the talk was to go to the festival. Come on, man. I mean, you can't get around it. The feasts are forever. Yo, get out the world, get out the matrix, and stop taking and going to the feast. We look at the last one, the last great day, Leviticus 23:36, which is found in chapters in the quote-unquote New Testament, John chapter 7 through 9, which kind of, you know, that was around that time. So it's evident is there, you know. So we want to move on real quick. We want to take the time to say, hey, hope you're having a great Shabbat. You know, this is the way on Poetic Energy Network. I hope you're having a good time. Yo, we got about 24 minutes. We still have the guest coming. He's going to be on in a couple seconds. But, hey, not a couple seconds, but a couple minutes. So, hey, get your mind right. This is the way.
And not only the image, but even down to the name. Where it's only in modern English that we have the name Jesus. A couple of hundred years ago, that name never existed.
The mainstream media is ignoring this information. Most of the alternative media is also ignoring it.
The way. Poetic Energy Network.
Okay. We back. This is what's going on. Okay, we want to get into. We're gonna have to speed it up a little bit because I want to get the time to speak to our brother, you know, James Green online. So hey. This is what we're going to do. Okay, we got one more thing, and then we're going to get into it. And then we're going to play the new joint. I know you're ready. I know you want to hear it. It's going down. Okay, this is what it is. The fact of the day, we're going into the fact of the day. Man, I found this out, man. This is really a blessing right here. If you're online, if you're listening to this, man, share this with people, man, because I found out this. It's a book called The Book of Jubilee. And with this book, you know, we found a nugget because, you know, you have these apocryphal books. You know, who you have to watch out for, you have to discern. But this is a real nugget. This really teaches you what Yahuwah is, you know, what he really wanted from for us about the Sabbath. Today, the Sabbath, the seventh day in which he rested from all his works, in which we should do the same. You know, the commandments. We should rest from our works. You know, so I want to read this. This is from the Book of Jubilees, the 50th chapter. I want to read this because this is a real blessing. This shows you, you know, because we were debating on some things, and Father showed us, hey, this is how you honor me on the Shabbat. This is what it says. It says, "And behold, the commandment regarding the Sabbaths, I have written them down for thee, and all the judgments and the laws. 6 days shalt thou labor, but on the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahuwah your Elohim. It says, in this you shall do no matter of work. Ye know your sons, know your men, know your servants, know your maid servants, and all your cattle or your sojourn also who is with you. It says, and the man that does any work shall die, whoever desecrates that day, whosoever lays with his wife, whoever says he will do something on it, that he will set out on a journey, therefore, regarding to any buying and selling. And whoever draws any water which he had not prepared for himself on the sixth day, and whoever takes up the burden to carry it out on the tent of his house, you shall do no matter of work whatever on the Sabbath day, save you have prepared for yourself on the sixth day, as to eat, drink, rest, and to keep the Sabbath from all work on that day, and to bless Yahuwah Elohim, who has given you the day of a festival and a set-apart day. So it goes even further into it. But, I mean, that's, you know, the main message. We, of course, we know about the commandments. God says how you rest. But this gives you a little more definition of what he was saying. Because remember how he taught the Israelites, you know, the quote-unquote Hebrews, you know, quote-unquote, you know, we're going to get into that. Man, that's another whole, you know, we're going to get into that. The real Hebrews, you know, not the Jews, not the Khazars. He told the Hebrews that, hey, he showed them, you know, they were picking up, he taught them by picking up sticks, you know, they were gathered for 6 days, and they had to prepare everything. They had to prepare double for the sixth day, you know, in order to have it on the seventh day, because they were not to do no matter of work. And so that's the same concept here. He says, hey, you know, we should have everything prepared on the sixth day, you know, double what we should have on the seventh day. So you have food, you know, I know we're still learning, but you have food, you know, prepare, you know, it for on the sixth day, and then being able to eat it on the seventh day. You know, we're still learning, we're still getting it. He says, whoever, he also talked about whoever learns with his wife, you know, lays with his wife, and whoever, you know, sets out on a journey and does something and stuff like that, you know, regarding buying and selling, you know, so you don't really want to be in the marketplace and doing your own will, and, you know, even down to speaking your own words, you want to honor his day. And so, because, you know, I mean, Yahuwah is serious about this, because the one guy who was gathering sticks, you know, he ended up dying. You know, so Yahuwah's not playing about a set-apart day, and he really wants us to take it serious. So, you know, if you got it little by little, you know, get it done and begin to help and pray about keeping the day set apart to Yahuwah, our Elohim, and being able to rest, you know, rest and keep from all work and just relax. You know what I'm saying? Because he gave us the Sabbath so we can relax, so we can enjoy, so you can share with others, so you can, and remember the teachings of Yahusha, who said it's good to do righteousness on Shabbat. You know, there are situations where things happen in which, you know, if somebody was stuck, you know, their ox is quote-unquote in the ditch, you got to help them. It's good to do righteousness on Shabbat. We don't get into the legalistics of it, but hey, keep the Shabbat. So Shabbat Shalom. Okay, now, we're going to get into it. Man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. You know, I'm going to see how I'm going to do this. I'm going to play the new jam. The jam, I don't know if it's new. Hold on, we're going to bring them on. We're going to bring them on. Yo. Mr. Yeah. James Green, are you on the line?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Hey, man. How's it going? Shabbat Shalom to you, man. What's going on?
Shabbat Shalom. Man, I'm just blessed and happy to be here, for real. Really happy to be here.
Man, it's going down. We've been excited all week, man, to have you on, man. What's going on, man? We've been talking about a couple things. You know, we have a little time to burn. We got about a couple
right,
minutes.
Right.
We got about, you know, 17 minutes. We're going to play your jam in a little bit. But,
okay, that's cool.
You know, we wanted to, you know, because we know where you come from. You know, James Green,
right.
I don't know if you knew, former member of the group Drew Hill. So we wanted to ask
right,
you, man,
right.
what got you involved in the music industry? Like, what attracted you to, you know, singing and all that?
Man, I was singing in church since I was 3 years old. Like, my mom was a choir director. So she started me singing in church. I did my first concert when I was 3. And after that, I just would sing around from church to church. And when I got in high school, I, you know, like, for the girls or whatever, because I was, like, a real nerd. Ain't no girl paying me no mind. But one day I started singing, like, as a joke. And, like, all the girls started crowding around. So by me being shy, I put a group together. So just so I would have some people to stand with me when I did my singing. And next thing you know, the group became like the biggest thing around the school. And next thing you know, after that, started doing like the Apollo, won first place at the Apollo. But the whole time, my mom took me out of the group because we weren't singing gospel music. And after I got out of high school, they found a way we became a gospel group. And then the guy who had worked with them prior to me getting back in the group convinced us to try R&B one last time. And that's when we ended up making our record, you know?
Man, that's awesome. Yeah. I didn't even know that, man. That's okay. So you see, you're on the path and the journey, man. How was it? How was the, you know, because I know you rubbed some shoulders with the people that, you know, people look up to. You know, I know you, the Biggie Smalls and these people like this, I know you rubbed shoulders with. So tell me, what's going on and how was it?
I mean, for me personally, I always felt like the Heavenly Father, Elohim, like, always had his hand on me to make it, like, not a fun experience for me or just to let me know that it wasn't where I belong personally. Because, like, from day one, from the day that we got signed, like, the day before we went up to New York and got our actual record contract, I went to the barbershop, and the barber told me that I had some ingrown hairs. So he told me to take tweezers and pull the ingrown hairs out. He didn't specify to, like, pull out one end. Yeah, so I just sat in the mirror and pulled all the hair out of my face. And when we went up there to do the audition for the record company, I was sitting there, and my face looked worse than the dude Craig Mack. Like, my face looked real crazy, and it's like, only me out of the whole group. So when I got up there, like, I was one of the lead singers of the group. And when the record company took a look at me, they say, oh, no, we can't have him up front looking like that. So there go my spot, you know. So that was a sign. And then secondly, we started dancing. I was never a dancer. The group was never a dancing group because we were modeled after the R&B group Jodeci. And, you know, Jodeci was church boys also, so all they did was just do a little church rock side to side. When we started doing the choreography, I actually quit the group that same night. But the dude who brought us up there, I let him convince me to come back and be in the group again. But, like, all through the whole time we were doing it, it was so many signs from the Most High that I didn't belong there. But I chose to ignore them for as long as I could until one day we were in France. And I prayed because, like, the night before, it seemed like no matter what I did, like, I didn't get the reaction from the crowd that I wanted, and it seemed like they was, like, ignoring me. So, excuse me, I prayed, and the voice came to me, and it was like, you're never going to get what you want until you're doing it for me. So when I heard that voice, I was like, hey, that's all I need to hear. I'm going and I'm quitting the group tomorrow. And when I got back with the group, I just didn't have it in my heart to quit because I didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But the following day, we went to Paris. And when we got there, they told us that it was going to be a shootout. I mean, they told us we were going to be in a fight. They said, it's going to be a fight tonight. And we were like, okay, we sing R&B music, because all the people they was naming that were American artists were all rappers. We like, nah, ain't going to be no shootout. We sing R&B. We sing love songs. Like, sorry about that. It's a train going past where I am. But it's like, right when that happened, sure enough, it was a shootout that night, and, like, all of us could have got killed. And I just kept thinking of the story of Jonah in the Bible when the Most High called Jonah and told him to go to Nineveh and preach, and he went in the opposite direction, and the ship started sinking, and, like, everybody could have lost their life because Jonah was being hard-headed. And I was thinking that everybody in our group and the entourage could have all been killed because the Most High already called me out of it, and I'm continuing on with it, you know? So at that point, I actually quit the group, like, not long after that, when I set up a Will Smith video.
Man, so
yeah,
man, so that's amazing, man. So I got a couple more questions because we got about 12 minutes. I gotta play the jam.
Okay.
But I want to say, okay, you know, we heard a lot about, you know, the Illuminati and
right.
The last two questions for you. We heard a lot about the Illuminati, so we want to hit on that real quick, and then I want to ask you, like, how did you come to know Yahuwah and Yahusha, man? Like, how did it come down? But just expand on that for us.
Okay, well, as far as, like, the whole Illuminati and stuff like that, like, I didn't know, honestly, I knew nothing about it the whole time that I was in the group. But what ended up happening after I left the group for the second time, because, like, the record label actually forced me to come back, they told me that the only way that they could release my gospel album is if I went back and did another album with the group. And they basically starved me to the point where I didn't have any money or anything, anything to eat or anything without coming back and doing that. So I'm sorry to admit it, but at the same time, like, you know, in the Bible it says once a man knows the truth and he strays out of it, then, you know, they say he remained in the congregation of the dead. But I wasn't in the truth because I was still going to the pagan Sunday sun worship church. So I really, to my defense, I really didn't know any better. Because, like, a lot of the pastors in the church was the main ones talking about, oh, you left the group too soon. Actually went to a church, and the pastor and his twin brother asked me to teach them the hominy to somebody sleeping in my bed. So wow. It's like, that goes to show you that I wasn't being fed anything, so I really didn't have any knowledge. But to get back to your question, I'm sorry, I kind of deviated. But what I learned, I was actually on YouTube, and I was watching, I don't know if you know, it's a pastor. He's a church pastor, but he says a lot of things that are deep. You know, his name is Geno Jennings. And I was watching one of his, and I watched him because he's funny. He has a real funny voice. He's like, am I right? And so I watched him laugh, and he started talking about, like, the Illuminati. I'm like, what is that? Like, because a girlfriend, one of my ex-girlfriends used to tell me about it, and I just wanted to seem like a know-it-all back there. So she's like, know about the Illuminati? I'm like, oh, yeah, I know all about that, and just, like, changed the subject. So, like, when he started talking about it, I'm like, this is interesting. So one of the links on what he was talking about, like, he just basically didn't say much, but one of the links on the side, what he was saying led me to the guy called The Industry Exposed. And as I started watching his videos, I started saying to myself, like, this explains why I never was able to get anywhere and why the record company was only listening to one person in the group, because it was actually one of the group members who used to read books by Hitler, read books about mind control and stuff like that. So he was the only one that the record label listened to. And he doesn't have basically any singing talent. Like, he don't sing at all. So they wasn't listening to the singers. They was all listening to him. And that's because he was down with, you know, whatever was going on. And the more I read and the more I figured out that, like, the name of our group, we were called Legacy. And that meant, it was an acronym. It meant letting every generation encourage the coming youth. They changed our name to Drew Hill, which is short for Druid Hill. And you know what a druid is. They changed our name to that first and foremost. Secondly, we went to, they did our photo shoot at a Chinese restaurant. Like, we didn't have any dragon for our symbol. Like, they took us to this restaurant, and then they were like, well, you guys need a logo. And ironically, it was ironic to us, but it wasn't ironic to them. I believe they knew what they were doing. It was like, it's a dragon on the back of the wall at the restaurant. It's like, we can make that you guys' logo. And we didn't know any better, so we like, oh, yeah, you know? So then later on when I started really reading the Bible, I read Revelation and found out that they said that that's what they call Satan at the end of the day, said that old dragon, which is the devil, you know. And immediately I started asking them, why couldn't we change our logo? And they were like, oh, it's a brand. It's just like McDonald's. You don't change the M, so we not changing our logo. That's what people know y'all by. People got tattoos. And at the time, I'm like, what if that's the mark? I mean, then I didn't know any better. I'm like, what if that's the mark of the beast and we're encouraging people to get it, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. So it's like they used us to implement like the first like woman on woman kiss in a R&B urban music video, was in I was sleeping in my bed video. So much stuff went on that we didn't know about. You know, like they used us as basically puppets to put ideas out. And I want to say to the defense, I mean, it's a lot of artists, don't get me wrong, that do know what they're doing, but there are also artists that, you know, I really believe it's because of the fact that it was a group. And as long as one person knew what it was and was able to convince the rest of us to do it, then there wasn't no need for everybody to be quote-unquote initiated or whatever, because I never did any type of initiation or all that stuff that a lot of, like, I will say this, like, a lot of these people that's making these videos on YouTube and what have you, a lot of them are bringing out a lot of truth, but some of them, I have to say that, some of them you could tell that they had aspirations to be in the music business, and because they never made it, some of what they're saying is true, but some of it is mixed with a little bit of hate that they never made it. So they want to generalize and be like, oh, all them people that's doing that had to take it up the rear and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm here to tell you, I ain't never do nothing like that, you know? I can't speak to nobody else, but I know me personally, I ain't never take no oath. I never, nobody prick me. I don't like no needles. I got more than enough tattoos that I regret getting, but that's a whole other story for another day. But I never did no type of initiation, nothing, you know? Which is probably why everybody else in the group is making more money than me, that I found out later on, too. But that's a whole other story, too.
Man. So what is the awakening moment to the Father, Yahuwah, and his son, Yahushua?
Okay. Basically, I was going to church, like, all my life. And one day, I was watching. We had on the public access channel here. We had, like, some Israelites. And it was the ones that I don't really care for now. because I know more than what I know, but at the same time, I give them credit because they were, I do give them credit for my initial awakening. You know, the ones that, what they call them, the great millstone or whatever, that stand outside and yell and cuss at people and talk about only black people can be saved and all that. Like, they would be, it was just amazing to me that they would be outside and they would be telling black people, like, all good stuff, but all the black people would just walk past and everybody else would watch. So I'm like, maybe there's something to what these guys are saying. And I actually pulled my Bible out one time when I was watching. I was like, well, they do say that, you know, like they don't have trick Bibles. And I just started getting interested. And eventually I started, I put something up on YouTube and it was a guy, and I couldn't tell you who he is to this day because he told me he was a couple different people. But we were actually, like, he was supposed to be a boxer. And something happened, he confessed to me that he wasn't a boxer, but he said he was a boxer's brother. Then I asked to meet him because he was supposed to be in Philadelphia. So I asked to meet him because I was on my way to Philadelphia. And he basically bluffed me, and I never met him in person. But whoever he was, he sat down and walked me through the Bible, like, and explained to me, read me the identity passage in Deuteronomy 28 and 68. He read to me how to pray from Kings, like, when they show how, you know, King Solomon prayed with his hands up. And, you know, like, he just basically walked me through all the basics, like, on a daily basis. He would call me on the phone and, like, get your Bible out. And we would just read, and he just walked me through it. And during that same time, my dad was in the hospital, and he was, I didn't know that he was, like, on his deathbed. I just thought that, because my dad was in and out of the hospital a lot during my life, but one day I just got a random text on my phone and was like, they said, it said God, but you know, we know better than that, but it said God is going to snatch you away from the traditions of your family because it's a higher calling on you that hasn't been on anybody before you. And it's like the reason why I was going to church at that time was because my dad, my mom had passed away already. And my dad was like, well, you know, mom would like for us to go to church. So he used to come and pick me up every Sunday for church. But what was the thing about it, he would pick me up late. So, like, by the time he had picked me up, I'd already got a message from the Israelites already, like a real message that was kind of, like, on the truth. So by the time we got to church, we would be late. And all we would do was go in and give him some money and hug the pastor and his daughters and, you know, the family. And that was basically it. But, like, when he passed, like, right after I got that text, my dad passed, and I was like, a couple weeks after that, he passed away. And I was like, maybe that's what the text meant, because when I got it, I hurried up and shut my phone because I didn't want to see it. But after he passed, I opened and I looked back at it and said, snatch you away from the traditions of your family. And I'm like, that's the only reason why I was still going to those pagan churches, is because I was going with my dad. And they, basically my dad was snatched away. And that was me being snatched away from those traditions. And I just started clinging more and more heavily to reading the Bible for myself and getting an understanding. I started looking into the concordances to see the real meaning behind the words, learning some basic Hebrew and things like that. And it's like, I just been hooked ever since. And the Apocrypha is a book called Ecclesiasticus that says, through little business, a man becomes wise. And, like, for 3 years, I was unable to get a job. Like, no matter how hard I tried, I could not get a job. And so all I really had to do was sit down with the Bible and read and learn and, like, just take down notes and stuff. So I feel like I've got, like, really, like, a crash course on the Word, you know?
Man, praise Yahuwah, man, that he just, I mean, it's amazing to see, you know, this the journey, you know, where it's taking you, man. You know what I'm saying? So, hey, we might have to have you back again, man, because we got about a couple minutes, man. We got to squeeze the jam in here. But the Truth is Marching On. Give us a quick plug about the Truth is Marching On, man.
Truth is Marching On is actually the first song I recorded once I started coming into the Truth. And, you know, like, I was just excited. Like, my brother is a producer. His name is Ebenezer. And he just put the track on one day, and I heard it. And I was like, yo, who is that for? Because he was producing some stuff for some local artists in Baltimore. And I said, who is this track for? He was like, nobody. I was like, well, can I, you know, just play around with it and see what I come up with? And he said, go ahead. So then we just, that basically was just the product of what I had learned at the time up until that point. And I mean, I've definitely learned more since then. Like, if you notice on there, I do say, like, I think I say Lord or something like that. But it's like, it was basically, it just shows my growth. Like, when I listen to that song, I listen to the new stuff that I've done recently, I look back on it, and I'm like, that's my growth. You know, like, everybody had to start from somewhere. So that was, like, my first attempt at trying to put some of the truth that I learned into to music, you know?
Okay. Man.
Yeah.
Well, brother, I hope you have a blessed Shabbat, man. We're going to play it.
Yes, sir. You too.
You too,
okay,
man. Hey, man. Yahuwah bless you, man, and keep you. Hey,
yes, sir. You also.
We listen. You too, man. Hey, you have a blessed Shabbat, man. We're going to play it. Hey, The truth is marching on. James Green. Hey,
praise him.
Someone's
been lying to I mean, right here.
So I come to this conclusion.
I know what I gotta do.
His truth must be brought home.
That what y'all been asking for? Shalom, shalom, everybody.
Brothers and sisters.
Sorry I kept y'all waiting so long. Technical difficulties, y'all know how that go. But I'm here now. Ain't that what's important? For sure, for sure. And this is a heater produced by Ebenezer.
Don't believe everything you hear. Don't believe everything you see. Please believe that the end is near. Don't be fooled by the enemy. Cause everything that glitters ain't gold. And everything that looks good to you ain't good for you.
Ain't good for you.
Signing off. This is the Poetic Energy Network Station. I'm Yahuwah Saad. Shabbat Shalom today. I hope you have a blessed Shabbat, man. Yahuwah bless you and keep you, and may his face shine upon you. You got to tune in for next week because it's going down again. Hey, let's exit it out. I hope you're having fun. I hope you have fun. But let's, hey, we got to ride. We got to get up out of here. Hey, but it's been good.
And not only the image, but even down to the name. Where it's only in modern English that we have the name Jesus. A couple of hundred years ago, that name never existed.
The mainstream media is ignoring this information. Most of the alternative media is also ignoring it.
The way, the way, the way. Poetic Energy Network.